Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deducciu, and what we're talking about this time around is the 2024 movie Civil War, directed by Alex Garland. Now, this is one of these things where I've got a lot to unpack. I've just seen the film. Yes, it's coming out less than a week since it's actually been released. And I'm going to tell you right now, I would give it 4 stars. And I'll tell you why. So, I have a sneaking suspicion that because this film feels so now, that it will not age particularly well. Allow me to explain. If you don't know the basic setup of Civil War, it's set in the very near future where the President of the United States has become a tyrant. He has gone on to run for 3 terms and has disbanded the FBI, and now California and Texas have broken away from the United States and become known as the Western Front and are heading towards Washington, D.C. to try and fight a civil war. And Florida has also broken away and tried to influence the Carolinas to join their side for reasons unknown. So the whole story is told through the eyes of photojournalists played by Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, and Kaylee Spaney. And this is coming out in an election year against the most highly charged election in American history since the U.S. Civil War. You know, the other Civil War. So with all of this in mind, there's a lot to unpack here. And this is why I mean it feels very now. Just recently, there was some research in America that showed that just over 30% of Republicans thought that violence was the only way to solve political dissent and division in America. Don't worry, the Democrats were just under 20%, and here's the really troubling one, at also just under 20% were undecided independent voters. Now, whatever your political perspective is, I do get that people are so passionate about their politics that they might even die or fight for their politics. I get that. What I don't get is people going, I'm completely undecided, but I will start a fight. It's like, you're the problem. I get it when both sides want to clash, but if you're in the middle going, why are you also really willing to go to violence? That's kind of terrifying. I'm laughing, but also it's pretty chilling if you, the more you think about it. So, yeah, there's, like I say, there's a lot to unpack here, but a lot of reviews, and I would absolutely agree with them, is this is surprising. Recently, films have only got longer. We got something like Dune Part 2, that's nearly 3 hours. We got Oppenheimer that is 3 hours. We had Killers of the Flower Moon that was 3.5 hours. And yet this thing where we don't really, we're not familiar with the initial trigger points or situation, because like I said, it's set slightly in the future. we got no idea, and yet it's all wrapped up in about an hour and 45 minutes, which so it certainly cracks along as a movie, but it does mean fundamentally we don't actually know if the president's the bad guy or not. And, you know, it's certainly strongly implied that he's wrong, but we've got no idea what California Texas conglomerate stands for. This is directed by Alex Garland. Now, Alex Garland is a great writer and director. His directorial debut was 10 years ago with Ex Machina, which is an amazing film, which over the last 10 years has only aged like fine wine, about a man who gets to meet an AI robot and it sort of tries to carry out the Turing test. Is it a real person inside there or not? It's a brilliant movie. It's a very small, tight, it's almost a three-hander. It's not quite, but there's very few people in it. It's a brilliant idea that's done really well. I would say all of his directed movies are very strong. His written stuff, so a novel, The Beach, which is one of Leonardo DiCaprio's earlier films, but his second one was 28 Days Later, you know, that zombie horror movie set in London. And he's written a lot of sci-fi. He likes the slight squint on reality, and he's been on the record saying, you know, he wrote Sunshine as well, which is a really underrated sci-fi movie. He's done loads of stuff. Generally a big fan. Not quite all of his stuff has worked, but like I said, I'm not a big fan of The Beach, actually. A lot of people think it's a sort of flawed. But he's always got something to say, and he's a really interesting director. But he's British. And I've seen him interviewed about this film going, you know, why didn't you set it in Britain or another country? And he said, look, I love living in Britain, but we have to be honest that we're an inconsequential country. If they're the big political events in Britain don't mean a lot to the rest of the world, but America is a different level. That's true. But I think he then went on to say, look, this is a story about the dangers of popularism, about the polarization of politics.
Citizens of America, people of the Florida Alliance and the Western forces of Texas and California will be welcomed back to these United States as soon as their illegal secessionist government is deposed.
I'm not so sure about that, because while he's right, there is definitely true that there's been a rise in popularism and a rise of the right, in particularly in mainland Europe. People would say it's happening in Britain too, but it's not the same as America. People really didn't like Boris Johnson, but nobody doubted that he got elected. He didn't turn around and say, this is a coup, why am I being kicked out? He went willingly. And shortly we will be having an election here in the UK, but it isn't really charged. Everybody feels like it's probably Labour's turn, and I don't know what's going to happen. But the point is, people are more divided in Britain than they used to be. But I've got friends who vote 2, 3, 4 different ways, and we still talk to each other. And we do occasionally raise a bit of politics, but we're polite enough to hear each other out. In America, I've literally got family members who can't talk to each other anymore because it's gone so far in terms of the polarization. And also in Britain, even if everybody was as polarized as America, what are we going to do? Hit each other over the head with spatulas or something? In America, everybody could have access to a gun, so it's much easier to turn it into a civil war. So that's why it's being picked. Now, maybe Garland is thinking, if I start making the president clearly Donald Trump, well, then that's going to turn off a lot of Republicans who I want to show them that by comparing politics to war, this can lead to a very dark place and they're not going to get the message. But the problem is, by not comparing the president really to anything, you just hear a couple of things off the record.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
Okay, but I don't know what Texas and California stand for. Maybe they're fundamentalist Christian, anti-abortion, anti-human rights, kill every Muslim, or whatever. You know, we got no idea who they are and what they stand for. And therefore, it is trying to have its cake and eat it too. And I've seen a few people that aren't in the actual critics circuit say, oh, this is a politically charged movie. No, it isn't, because there's no politics there. It's not making any. The one thing you can walk away from is maybe before we start picking up a gun, we should actually start talking to each other. But that's something I knew before I went into the movie. Whereas, and this is why I'm saying the film will show its age, there is a very grand, hugely respected legacy of amazing films around photojournalism in particular, but journalism as a whole, that are all based on real events. I'll give you a few examples. There's The Killing Field. Now, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about bringing that in a different way on a different topic. The Killing Field is an interesting case in point. That film is now 40 years old. Nobody talks about it anymore. And I know why. Because every time I saw it flash up on my Amazon screen, it's just sort of like, do I really want to watch a movie called The Killing Fields?
In a country shattered by war, a New York Times reporter and his interpreter would learn the price of survival.
And this is the problem a lot of people had with it at the time. It's like, it's a pretty bleak film. Yeah, but it's a pretty bleak film showing real history, real situations. It's actually about a real photojournalist and his Cambodian friend, who has also worked as his translator, who ends up being captured and put in the internment camps. I won't go into it any further. But, you know, there was the Khmer Rouge. It is estimated they killed around 33% of the male population of Cambodia and about 15% of the female population. So rather than just putting it into, you know, million numbers, let's just talk about, you wipe out a third of your country of one sex. That is awful and terrible and shocking. But it is the true story of trying to get this story out to the wider world. Who cares about Cambodia? Can you really find it on a map? And that kind of level of death is not as well remembered as the Holocaust. Now, it wasn't as many people, but like I say, proportionally, it was a terrifying amount of people when we're talking about a small country. So you got the Killing Fields, which 100% is about photojournalism, about real people. And indeed, the actor who plays the Cambodian translator was a real Cambodian who really was in the middle of the whole Khmer Rouge catastrophe. Both his wife and child died in it. He's one of only two people to not be a professional actor to win an Oscar. He is remarkable in it. If you haven't seen it, well, if you haven't seen it, check it out. I mean, you'll need a stiff drink afterwards, probably. It's a five-star movie. It's an Oscar-winning movie, and quite rightly so. Then you've got something like, none of these are going to be upbeat, because this is the thing, photojournalism or journalism movies, they're not going to be about fun things. You're not, well, I guess, you know what? Comedy journalism? Anchorman, okay? But they do point out that nobody really cares about the water skiing squirrel. That's not going to get you an Oscar either. But Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, are two of my favorite comedies and some of the most quotable films ever.
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
So yes, okay, I've lightened you up there, but now I'm going to depress you again. Let's talk about Salvador. This is the movie that Oliver Stone made before Platoon. It hadn't actually come out before Platoon started being filmed, but everybody was so impressed with it, they allowed him to have the money and to finally start his passion project was to make the Platoon movie. But this is all about the civil war in El Salvador. Again, people don't talk about that. That's not a well-known story. It is one of the bleakest, most brutal films ever. I remember when I saw it, I've only ever watched it once, but I still got certain scenes of that film living in my head. It's just such a brutal film. But of course, it all actually happened. Moving away, I guess, from the war type stuff, you know, because if you talk about Salvador and the Killing Fields and in civil war, these are journalists who are genuinely in harm's way. They could die doing their job. But then you've got Spotlight, a far more recent movie about the exploration in Boston of the child sex scandal with the Catholic Church and sort of like the build-up of it and how they uncover all this stuff. And that's got a whole load of great actors in it. It's incredibly shocking, incredibly powerful. Full disclosure, at the end, they reveal all of the schools which had cases against it, including my old school. Now, for the record, nobody touched me because I was an atheist. I guess they didn't dare do that to me. But that had an extra layer of pain from my perspective as well. So Spotlight shows you the investigative's time, and like I say, when it comes at the end, and you with a lot of these movies, it kind of fades to black and then gives you statistics or tells you something. Not all of them, but you know, it just brings it home. All the President's Men, I'm going to say that one hasn't aged so well, because while it is a brilliant job of showing the investigative journalism that leads, is all about the Watergate affair with Richard Nixon and how these two journalists from the Washington Post just won't leave it alone and end up culminating in the President of the United States having to leave the White House. And while it's an amazing story, you know, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, both great actors as well, both in their prime when they were doing this in the 1970s. The criticism I have of this film is that it assumes you know a lot about it. Now, when it came out in the 1970s, if they were to spoon-feed you the story of Watergate, it wouldn't have won Oscars, because people go, well, yeah, we just lived through this. Problem is, nearly 50 years later, not everybody does know the Watergate story, and therefore there is a certain element of what's going on? Who's this? What's this comparison? I don't get it. It really hits the ground running. Then you got Zodiac, which I'm going to say, sorry about this, full disclosure, it's one of these films I respect rather than I'm a huge fan of, but this is a bit like All the President's Men and Spotlight in the sense it's about investigative journalism trying to get to the heart of who is the Zodiac killer in the Bay Area. This is actually the same thing as what Dirty Harry was based on and Scorpio, although this shows you the real thing, that, spoiler for the movie, but this is history, they never found the guy. They have their suspects, but they can't quite prove it in the movie. And you've got Jake Gyllenhaal, you've got Robert Downey Jr., it's a David Fincher movie. It's got all the right elements, okay? I guess, fundamentally, I'm not a fan of a, and we got no idea who it was at the end, or it's like, you know, we can't definitively say. It's like, that's a very long movie to come up with a at the end. You want some closure. That's how a movie works. Now, that shows you how complicated real life is. So look, I could go on, but we're talking about Civil War here. And this is the problem. All these other ones, you can refer back to the history, etc., whereas this is showing you nothing. Now, in an election year, and like I say, it's extraordinarily highly charged, there is violent metaphors and things like that being used, mainly from the Trump side. You know, at one point recently, you referred to a bloodbath, which is, you know, it's not helpful. He goes, oh, it was in reference to, like, people losing their jobs. It's like, you knew what you were saying. You know, it's a dog whistle to the right kind of people. And off the back of January 6th, which was the most dangerous insurrection in American history since the Civil War, and you've now got people like Donald Trump referring to them as patriots. It's like, people died, including a police officer. That's not a sign of a patriot. Are you pro or anti law and order? Because the police were trying to stop rioters getting into the Capitol. It's not a good look. The other problem with this film is, and I've done a podcast about this as well, but it's coming up, is it came out within a year of 20 days in Mariupol. If you don't know what that is, in 2024, it won the Oscar for Best Documentary. And it's the true story in 2022 of the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And there are these journalists in Mariupol. And they realize that the Russian army is getting closer, but they decide to stay as the city is getting surrounded because they want to document it. And I'm not going to go into that because I go into far more detail in another podcast. But the point is this, they are in genuine danger. And just trying to get the photos out, the stories out to the wider world as more routes out, more Wi-Fi is cut, more phone lines break down, power starts failing. It is the most brutal documentary I've ever seen, most brutal film I've ever seen. Because yes, of course, something like Shoah is more powerful, or something like Schindler's List is amazing. But the thing here is, it's in HD. This happened 2 years ago, and people are there on their phones, and it just looks like it happened down the road, basically. That's the power of 20 Days in Mariupol, and it's doing exactly what Civil War is, only it's doing it with real. When you see blood, when you see somebody crying over a child, that's a real death of a real child. And yet, with Civil War, there's a little part of your brain going, yeah, but this hasn't happened yet, is what's making it such a big hit. But it hasn't happened. There's a fair comment that a lot of America is actually purple. What I mean by that is, you know, there's quite a lot of red people, Republicans, quite a lot of blue people, Democrats. It is worth remembering that you've got Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon, who both had their political power, or in the case of Nixon, he's actually born in California. California used to be a Republican state, but it's tilted Democrat. It is interesting that there more and more people are voting Democrat in Texas, but it's still got a way to go before it's ever going to go blue. Now, it's also worth pointing out that California on its own would be the seventh largest economy in the world. So if California and Texas, two fairly populous and economically strong states, did decide to break away from the rest of America, they would actually do fine. But you've got one that's quite fundamentalist Christian, quite right-leaning, and another one that's very liberal, very sort of like pro-choice, etc. I'm not sure those two states would ever link together to become a power against the central power. That just wouldn't seem to be the likely ones. You could have a more of a north-south divide, eerily similar to the Civil War. But again, just because your person hasn't become president, that isn't quite the same thing as fighting for slavery or fighting for your way of life, etc. Most people say, even if it did turn to violence in America, who are you shooting at? It won't be divided on the lines of slave-owning states and non-slave-owning states as happened in the Civil War. You wouldn't be able to get that momentum. Now, maybe this podcast ages badly and the movie ages perfectly, in which case we're all in very big trouble, okay? But I have a hunch this is a little bit of Hollywood hysteria. Going back to the movie then, Kirsten Dunst plays a very well-respected photojournalist, and her first name is Lee, and as the younger woman Kaylee points out, it's like, oh, that's the same as Lee Miller, who was a genuine photojournalist in World War II, a woman who was the first photographer to get into Dachau. So it does sprinkle a little bit of history there, and like I say, it has DNA going back to these other great movies about showing respect to photojournalism as an incredibly dangerous and
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Worthy and also Oscar-winning type of movie in the past. So you've got the old guard with Kirsten Dunst. Apologies, Kirsten, for calling you old, but hopefully she knows what I mean. And you got Kaylee. This is the shocking thing about Kaylee. They did a really good job of picking her. She plays a woman called Jessie. She's 25. The actress is actually 25. But my goodness, she looks like a teenage girl. She looks like she should be wearing a school uniform rather than having a career in photojournalism. And that was clearly a choice. She's so young. As a parent myself, you just want to kind of protect her, which is, again, probably what Alex Garland was going for. Then Wagner Moura. Now, if you don't know the name, you certainly know the face. And I will tell you, so I remember from, it's got to be well over 10 years ago, for sure. I mean, it might be 15, something like that. There was a Brazilian movie that came out called Elite Squad. And I was just aware of it. And it had a picture of a really tough looking police officer with a beret, I mean, paramilitary uniform. And I knew it was about an elite force of Brazilian policemen who went into the favelas and just started mixing it up with the gangs in firefights. The unit is called BOPA, and it's a very impressive film because I saw it recently. And that really tough, uncompromising cop on the front cover is Wagner Moura. And it's like, okay. However, the first time I was aware of his work was in Narcos, the Netflix show about cocaine dealing in Colombia, and particularly around Pablo Escobar. And Wagner Moura played Pablo Escobar. Now, he is a Brazilian by birth, which means he speaks Portuguese, which means presumably either he's bilingual in Spanish or he had to learn Spanish to be in Narcos and be a Spanish-speaking Colombian. But he's obviously fluent in English as well, because I've also seen him this year in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And he's aged really well. He clearly had to put on quite a lot of weight to play Pablo, because Pablo himself was kind of a stocky guy. But Wagner himself's a good-looking chap, and he's just got this charm to him. He had charm as Pablo Escobar, and he was sort of a little bit cheeky in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And you realize what a good actor he is in Elite Squad, because he's far grumpier and far more intense in that. That's a heck of a movie. City of God is the one that everybody knows from Brazil, and sort of like the slum gang violence. And that is an amazing film. But I'd actually put Elite Squad up there with it. I haven't seen the sequel, but Elite Squad 2 actually is the biggest grossing movie in Brazilian history. Full stop. You know, throw in Avatar there or Star Wars or whatever, they don't come close to Elite Squad 2. And I love the first one. I will be watching the second one at some point. So Wagner Moura plays another journalist. He's a bit more goofy. None of these people are particularly likable. Kirsten Dunst, she's really tough and cynical. And the point of her character, as she keeps teaching Kaylee, is you're a photojournalist. You're there to take the photos. You're not there to judge. Somebody else has to ask the questions. We're there to give them the information or the imagery so that they ask the questions, which is something that has come up on some of these other movies about this topic. Wagner Moura, there's a great bit where he turns around and goes, oh, the firefights are going on over there. I will paraphrase because I want to keep my clean rating. He goes, oh, I feel really, really excited about that. And it does show you that some of these people are adrenaline junkies. They have no interest in killing people. They're not trying to do that, but they want to be where the action is. And that's clearly what his character is. And he's kind of a little bit crazy, but something happens to him in the course of the movie. There's a great scene where he is just crying and screaming and is just a broken man. What's interesting is you just hear music. You don't hear his sound as a tank rolls behind him as well. And it's just beautifully framed and a beautiful bit of emotion. He's going places. I wouldn't surprise me at some point if he doesn't get nominated for an Oscar for something. And look, maybe for this. And Kaylee herself, she's the new young woman, and half the time it's like, oh, just come here. We'll just, you know, just stay out of it. Just listen to the grown-ups, will you? However, there is a very clunky scene early on in the movie as Kirsten and Kaylee have a conversation about the job. And there's a very telling phrase in it. And it's like, oh, okay, right. I now know how this movie's going to end. And this is why I'm going to keep it vague. And indeed, I guess it's a thing that once you sow that seed, the film is less if you don't give it a payoff. There is the concept of Chekhov's gun. If you show a gun in the first act, that gun will be fired in the third act. In other words, there's got to be a payoff. There are consequences, cause and effect, if you like. And certainly if you're hinting at something, then you really want to do it. I recently, a little while ago, I'm on a list of like, hey, do you want to come and see this movie and then tick boxes in terms of like, what did you think of it, etc. It was a Liam Neeson film. I can't quite remember what it's called. I've noticed that it's come out in America. I don't think it's come out in the UK yet. And it was the usual fare where he's just sort of like, he works for a gangster and he sort of occasionally kills people, but he's an old man and he sort of wants to hang his gun up, etc. It was fine. But the thing about it was, he would always get people to hold a potted plant when he shot them in the field. so that he could then bury them and then bury the tree over them, so it would explain why the earth is disturbed. Kind of a clever idea, also kind of environmentally friendly too. But also, as he explains it to one guy, he looks around, sees all these shrubs around him, and it's like, you've killed quite a few people here. And just that conversation about death, etc. He needed to die at the end of the movie, and he didn't. He sort of gets away with it, and that's one of the comments. Like, have you got any other comments, or how did you think the ending? It's like, if you're setting it up that this is the way people go, he needs to go the same way and not sort of shoot his way out of the problem. Same thing with, well, not exactly the same thing. Nobody's holding potted plants. Nobody's shooting anybody that way. Lots of people do get shot. But this conversation with Kaylee and Kirsten is like, yeah, this is probably how it's going to end. And it does end that way. And I don't know, maybe I've seen too many films. I was waiting for it. And when it happened, it wasn't shocking. It was like, yep, okay, right, I can tick the box of mission accomplished there from screenwriting. Alex Garland does know how to write. Now, a few things going on about this. A lot of people, like I say, are giving it like 4 stars. It's not been getting a cinema score. And what a cinema score is that's when they ask audiences on the opening weekend to give it a score, like an A or B or whatever. You can have pluses and minuses there as well. And the question isn't, is it a good movie? The question is it what you expected? Is it what you paid your money for? And so you can get something like Drive, the Ryan Gosling movie. That got a really bad cinema score because all of the exciting driving stuff was in the trailer. So it looked like it was like Fast and Furious, whereas what it is, it's a brilliant slow burn thriller where occasionally there are little moments, flashes of action or violence, and then everything goes back to being really internalized. It's a great, great film, Drive. Absolutely tanked at the box office, and it got a terrible cinema score because if you're walking in expecting to see high octane action a la Fast and Furious, and you get this tight, internalized, buttoned down, stripped down thriller, it's sort of like, but that's not what I was expecting. And they're saying not exactly the same thing, but with Civil War, it's been getting like BB pluses cinema scores, which means it's not quite hitting where people were. And I suspect that there are probably in America a lot of liberals going there, hoping that this will take the Republicans to task about all this violent imagery that's now sort of plaguing American politics, and it wasn't there. That's my suspicion, but here's the thing. A24 is the creators, and A24 is on a red-hot streak at the moment. A24 is one of the smaller studios that it's all about the script and the idea, and they are never going to make a superhero movie. But what they are going to do is make a really good movie. I've got a friend called Tim, and he and his son are really into movies, and the three of us talk about this. I've noticed, by the way, like I say, I've literally come out, but his son has already put a 5-star review up about Civil War. But he said, because I mean, look, he's younger, he hasn't seen as many films as me, but he said it's like, you know, a real political statement. It's like, well, I'm struggling to find the actual politics in this apart from war is bad, which hopefully we can all agree on. That's beside the fact. Tim says that when he's talking to his son, he goes, our motto in the house is you can't go wrong with A24. And I know what he means. They just don't really make bad films. It may not be a big budget film. It may not be a big deal, but it's good quality every time. However, interestingly for A24, Civil War is their most expensive movie ever. And I did a whole episode a while ago on the secrets of Hollywood finances, and I said that, you know, there are times when budgets have gone out of control, and it doesn't matter how big a hit it is, you're just never going to recoup your losses, and you should have spotted that. And a lot of movies in the past have got horribly unstuck by overburdening a budget. Now, that's not to say that A24 was just wanting to waste money on this one, but they realized to tell the story of a civil war, it couldn't just be two people in a foxhole talking about how awful the war was. They're going to have to show some of the war. But what I found interesting about the film is about 3/4 of the way into the film, yeah, I don't know, 2/3, 3/4, something like that, I'm sitting there going, I'm really enjoying this. But in the back of my mind, it's like, this is meant to be the most expensive A24 ever. And there's the poster associated with this is a picture of a sniper with sandbags on clearly the torch part of the Statue of Liberty, which would be a perfect place for a sniper's nest. Particularly, he's got a Barrett. You may remember I did the episode on snipers just a few episodes ago. Hello, there we go. The Barrett rifle appears again, this time on the promotional imagery for Civil War. But here's the thing. In all of the trailer, I realized none of this seems to be happening in New York. And indeed, New York is almost like a safe zone. The fighting isn't happening there. So there is no scene around the Statue of Liberty. I wasn't disappointed by that, but this is an example of one of these posters which gives you an idea of the tone of the movie, but actually none of that imagery is in the movie. Dark Knight, one of the greatest superhero movies of all time, is another example where the poster does not show you that. The poster was a picture of a side of a skyscraper, and there's this burnt Batman symbol, bat image on the side of it. That does not happen in that movie. Interestingly, it does happen in the next movie, Dark Knight Rises. I guess enough people complained about it that Nolan thought, well, maybe I need to put it in some, or maybe thought it's just such a good idea, I'll put it in the next one. Anyway, about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through, I'm sitting there going, I'm really enjoying this. This is a really good film, really well put together. I don't see why it's the most expensive. You know, they keep turning up at things like a gas station where bad things happen, or a car park where bad things happen. There's nothing wrong with the scenes, but none of them are super expensive. And I'm sitting there going, I'm not feeling like I'm missing anything, but I'm sitting there going, I wonder where they spent the money on. I mean, did all the actors charge a fortune? Because I'm not seeing it here on screen. And then you get the finale, which is a full-on battle. And it's like, oh, right, okay, this is where the money went. And no expense has been spared. It's amazing. It's incredibly cinematic. And you start, you know, because you've been with these characters the entire way through the film, you're now really scared for them. It's all like the bullets are flying. This is a very dangerous situation. You can do the best you can do, but if you want to follow those soldiers and, you know, there are mortar rounds going off, there are tanks firing, you know, there's machine guns firing. It's like, this is scary, scary stuff. And it's quite telling that in the case of Kirsten Dunst, she's finding it a little bit overwhelming, even though there are brief flashes of times when she's been in other places witnessing various combat. And so when you pull all this together, it is saying something quite powerful, but it's not political. You know, like I say, war is bad. We can all agree on that. You could tell exactly the same story in 20 Days in Mariupol, or The Killing Fields, or Salvador, okay? But the thing is, though, there is a special kind of impact in seeing savagery happen in just your average gas station in Pennsylvania, or seeing burnt-out cars near a shopping mall in America. You know, these are American cars. These are American freeways. These are American stores. Jesse Plemons is in it in one very powerful scene. Jesse Plemons, if you don't know, is actually the husband of Kirsten Dunst. So they do appear in a few movies together, and quite often they're quite adversarial with each other. So I don't know, maybe afterwards they kiss and make up, or maybe they're telling you something. Kirsten had a baby shortly before the filming of this movie, so their child was only about 1 year old, and she got back into the saddle of being an actress again. So it's the famous scene now from it where they turn around and go, we're American journalists. And he says, what kind of American? He's standing there in camo with these crazy red sunglasses, but he's also got either an AR-17 or some kind of M16 variant. I don't know, but he's got an assault rifle, and it's like the tension you can cut with a knife. And that's a point in a civil war. You know, it's like, hey, you know, we're all British, or we're all American, or we're English, or French. You know, there have been loads of civil wars in the past, and they have a real horrible level of viciousness to them. It's like, these are brothers fighting brothers, neighbors fighting neighbors. And it's almost like, because they're taking the safety off this violent tendencies that sadly humans have, they go even further. And you can sometimes get even worse atrocities in civil wars than in just flat-out war wars. It's worth remembering, the Korean War was technically a civil war. So was the Vietnam War. Most wars post-World War II have been civil wars, because if you start invading other countries, they may have nuclear weapons. Ukraine is almost an exception to this, but in essence, from the perspective of Putin, from his perspective, it is a civil war because he considers Ukraine part of it, although he would call it a special military operation. That's a whole other crazy thing. So civil war is paying homage to a job that has been going back to the time of the Crimean War. You got the very first war correspondence happening in the Crimean War. It's been around for 150 years, that job. But at the same time, it's also paying homage to a lot of 20th century work. Actually, another weird thing, and seeing it is set slightly in the future, and yes, there are photographers who use film, even professional photographers, there are a few that use film. The vast majority use digital. Modern digital cameras are as good as any film camera. And they're on the road, and clearly, you know, society's broken down a little bit because there's a civil war going on. So why is everybody using film? Why aren't you just using digital? At one point, she's checking the negatives. Kaylee is checking the negatives of her work using a really clever device, which also involves using a phone, a digital piece of equipment. So that seems a little bit odd. Also, considering it's set slightly in the future, if anything, people have only gone slightly further into the digital world. But it is paying homage to movies, to a job, to a history, and is also sending a warning to the modern day. And if this does make a few people pause as we come up to the American election in 2024, then maybe this film helps change history. But to be honest, I doubt it. And like I say, if in 10 years' time, you know, the 2024 election just runs fine and there's, you know, America calms down a bit, people will look back at this and go, well, you know, that was really just trying to shake people up at its time. That's what I mean about how now it is. Right now, it feels like a 5-star movie, although I'd give it 4 stars. I suspect in 10 years' time, it might get 3 stars and people say, yeah, it's a really good thriller, but it's made up. You know, if you want to see the same story, but you know, you can't hide behind this is all made up, then watch one of those other films that I've mentioned, because you can't hide behind fantasy at that point. They are not fiction. They are non-fiction. As always, I'm going to say, hey, look, please click subscribe. Please spread the word. Say hello to me on Twitter or Spotify. Spotify? Why did I say that? I barely use my... I'm trying to remember the word Threads. There we go. Say hello. Let me maybe... This has come out, you know, basically while the film's still in theatres. Have I convinced you to go and see it? Have I put you off? Have you seen it? What do you think? Do you think I'm being fair? Do you think I'm being unfair? Have dialogue with me. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.